Hello.
This is Lori and Tori coming to you from the haunted quarters of New England. And you're listening to the Something Wicked podcast, the show that delves deep into the topics of true crime, haunted histories, and all things paranormal, dedicated to the people that love to know all the spooky and gruesome details about serial killers, haunted houses, and creepy cryptids with tales to make you sleep with lights on. It's October, bitches!
October!
Your girl's mostest, favoritest time of the year.
Fuck yeah.
Spoopy season has begun. We are going to be going over all the creepy subjects, from ghosts to cryptids to some freaky-ass bullshit bridges.
Yes!
And finally, a special history of Halloween to end the season. Aww. Little bit of a sad face with hint of boop. Halloween needs to be year-round.
Anyway.
Today on Something Wicked, we are covering a very interesting topic that has baffled the minds of paranormal investigators and night terror sufferers from all around the world. The Shadow People.
For thousands and thousands of years.
There are many different theories, stories, and descriptions of these beings that haunt the dark corners of our bedrooms. Join us as we deep dive into these elusive, terrifying beings. So sit back, pop some corn, and let's get it. And welcome back to the show. And for those of you new to the podcast, I'll say thanks for tuning in. As we said in the intro, we are going to cover the topic of the Shadow People. Who are they? Where do they come from? What do they want? These are questions that have hung on the minds of hundreds, if not thousands, spanning the globe. We are going to cover their history, theories on what exactly they are, what we think makes the most sense, and even go over a few personal experiences. All right, my lovelies, get ready for some serious shadowy shenanigans. And here we go.
Woohoo!
Picture it, Sicily, 1922. Just kidding. Picture this, if you will. It's the middle of the night, you wake up, and you can't move. In the corner of your room, you see a dark figure. Your blood starts pumping. You break out in a cold sweat, and you pray that it's just a nightmare, or at the very least, your mind playing tricks on you. That the figure is just a pile of clothes that you left in the infamous laundry chair, or maybe even the cardboard cutout that you bought at the convention last week. But then it starts moving towards you, watching, reaching for your throat. You fight. You struggle against your invalid limbs, trying to scream, but no sound comes out. Helpless. And just when you think that this nightmare will never end, or that this thing may actually kill you, you snap out of it. You shoot up out of bed and look frantically around for your attacker, but it's gone. Vanish completely in front of your eyes. These are some of the more common experiences when it comes to dealing with shadow people. As stated before, there are many theories as to what they are, and the terrifying thing is that it's rare to hear that someone has never heard of or experienced some variant of these beings. The paranormal phenomenon of shadow persons, or shadow men, seen just out of sight, in the blink of an eye, or lurking in the corner of the room, are becoming an increasingly interesting area of study for many, precisely because we don't quite know what these shadow beings are. There are a huge number of theories, some suggesting that these black shadows are simply ghosts taking on a darker form, while other theories lean more towards the idea that they are time travelers or beings from an interdimensional plane, or even aliens. Maybe shadow people are all of the above, or maybe there's something more sinister. Explanations for what the shadow people actually are differs depending on where you look, but from a scientific perspective, when you see these figures, it is simply our minds filling in the blank spaces and creating something human-like from the shapes that we can see. Another explanation comes from night terrors. Much of the folklore surrounding shadow men centers on stories of people waking up after feeling pressure on their chest, a heaviness in the air, and a deep fear. When they awaken, that fear continues as they are completely unable to move and feel paralyzed. Often, this is accompanied by sightings of shadow persons sitting on their chest or lurking in the corners of the room. This is the most widely accepted scientific explanation for this phenomenon, but of course, there are many scenarios involving shadowy figures that can't be explained away quite so easily. Have you ever noticed something out of the corner of your eye and not quite been able to tell whether it was a person moving out of your vision or whether it was just a shadow? It may have well been a shadow person. Shadow people are different to spirits and ghosts in that they are dark in color. Shadow is the absence of light, and so facial features, clothes, and other details are generally completely undetectable. These shadowy figures will simply appear in a humanoid form, seemingly made from the shadows themselves. They could be the size of an adult, but you may see them appear as the size of a child. You might see them in the corner of a room, moving through walls, and they may move extremely quickly once you've taken note of them. The shadows may appear solid or like swirling smoke, and although it's more common to see shadow people at the edges of your vision, you may well be unlucky enough to encounter a shadow person face to face. Although shadow people are often described as ghost shadows or ghost people, the truth is that they seem to behave in an entirely different way to the other spirit phenomena. Orbs, ectoplasm, and the like are rarely ever seen around these shadow ghosts, although they're seen very commonly around areas of other ghostly and spiritual activity. It seems that shadow people are seen alone and act alone, which lends credence to the theories that they may be beings from another interdimensional plane, aliens, time travelers, or even something that we're not entirely sure how to define. If they are spirits or ghosts, one theory suggests that these shadows represent human spirits that are simply lost on this plane. They don't look the same as other spirits with facial features and clothing that we can recognize, because they haven't yet embraced their state of being, leaving them with an absence of the light that most spirits encounter upon moving into the next plane after death. This absence of light means that we see them as a shadow. This theory suggests that these shadows' ghosts are trapped because they cannot move on, so although they may feel sad and heavy, they're not necessarily evil or demonic in spirit. Another theory? We see them as a shadow simply because of the way our eyes perceive whatever light spectrum that these shadowy figures exist within. Another theory for these shadow persons is that they are in fact demonic in nature, simply due to the dark thoughts often experienced by those who encounter them. Again, this is often at odds to what you might experience when encountering neutral spirits or other entities, as these kinds of dark, malevolent, and intrusive thoughts tend to be associated with demonic beings. Encounters are often accompanied by feelings of intense dread, and often, witnesses to these shadow people do not feel like they are or have been in the presence of a being that was once human. The most popular answer to the "what are the shadow people" questions tends to lean towards a type of interdimensional being. Aliens is often bandied around as an answer and is not quite as ludicrous as it sounds. Many people believe that aliens are already here on Earth and are simply disguising themselves. Others believe that aliens are on Earth but are in a different dimension, and that these shadows are simply the slip between dimensions. Another theory based on astral beings and time travelers also works on the idea that these shadows are simply astral beings or time travelers who have slipped through one dimension or another. Just how these time travelers or astral beings slip through that dimension is something we don't have the answer for, but one theory as to why we may feel dread encountering these beings is simply due to the effect that a slip in our dimension would have on a healthy human. If you're seeing black shadows, try not to worry. It might just be shadows in the corner of the room. If you experience those feelings of dread and fear in the middle of the night, and you can see shadow figures lurking in the corners of the room, and, here's the key thing, you can't move, it's very likely that you're experiencing a night terror. Although they're exceptionally scary, they're actually harmless. If you can, try to wiggle your little finger or your little toe, and you'll soon get yourself out of the paralysis.
It's called sleep paralysis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier said than done.
Oh yeah, no, I get that.
Let's unpack the thought of it being a night terror. First, to answer the question of what the hell is a night terror, or sleep paralysis for those that don't know, is actually a rather common experience. Although you may not necessarily experience something like shadow people, succubi, or some type of demonic being, it can still be frightening. Sleep paralysis occurs at the transition between wakefulness and rapid eye movement, or REM sleep. During this stage of sleep, you have very vivid, lifelike dreams. To prevent you from acting out these dreams and hurting yourself, your brain temporarily paralyzes your entire body.
Or, you know, hurting the person you're sleeping next to. Wow!
Ow! This transition is tightly controlled by chemicals that tilt you between sleep and wakefulness, but sometimes you wake up while you're still under the spell of REM paralysis, leaving you stuck. In a sense, wakefulness and the dream world collide. I myself have had several bouts of sleep paralysis with and without seeing some type of entity. Yes, you may think I'm nuts, but you're also listening to a podcast that talks about the paranormal, so try to keep an open mind. Sleep paralysis and night terrors are an experience that I don't wish on any of my enemies. I think the thing that gets me the most when I experience it is the feeling of hopelessness. You are given this heavy, overwhelming dread that no matter what you do, this is it. This is how I go out. And it is petrifying, literally.
This is how I die.
Yeah. Your fight or flight kicks in, only there is neither of those options on the table.
Yeah, so you're fucked. Fucking move.
But going on that mindset, the physical incapacitation paired with the natural primal fear of the things hidden in the dark makes you see some crazy shit. That and the fact that sleep paralysis is basically you dreaming or having a nightmare while awake, so whatever hellish thing you had buried in your subconscious that is trapped in the safety of your dreams is now a living, breathing thing standing over your bed, or in most cases, crushing the air from your lungs while it's chilling on your chest. The explanation we get from skeptics in mainstream science, and who are usually people who have never experienced the shadow people phenomenon, is that it is nothing more than the act of human imagination. It's our minds playing tricks on us, our eyes seeing things in a fraction of a second that isn't really there. Illusions. Real shadows caused by passing auto headlights or some similar explanation. And without a doubt, these explanations probably can account for some, if not many, experiences. The human eye and mind are easily fooled. But can they account for all cases?
That I don't think so.
No.
No.
I don't believe so either.
No, because even in my own case, there's a lot of these things that just don't line up.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into that at some point.
Yeah. To call these entities ghosts demands first a definition of what we mean by ghosts. But by almost any definition, shadow people are somewhat different than ghost phenomena. Whereas ghost apparitions are almost always a misty, white, vapor-like, or having a decidedly human form and appearance, very often with discernible clothing, shadow beings are much darker and more shadow-like. In general, although the shadow people often do have a human outline or shape because they are dark, the details of their appearance is lacking. This is in contrast to many ghost sightings in which the witness can describe the ghost's facial features, style of clothing, and other details. The one detail most often noted in some shadow being sightings are their red glowing eyes.
Yeah.
If they are demons, we have to wonder what their purpose or intent is in letting themselves be seen in this manner. Is it merely to frighten? One theory suggests that shadow people are the shadows or essences of people who are having out-of-body experience. According to Jerry Gross, an author, lecturer, and teacher of astral travel, we all travel out of the body when we are asleep. Perhaps, this theory says, we are seeing the ephemeral astral bodies of these twilight travelers.
That's actually a really cool theory. I've never
thought of that. That is, too. Because I've had experiences, too. Like, I'm not going to outright say I've astral projected anywhere, because I have no fucking way of knowing. But I have had vivid dreams where I literally feel like I'm transported to another place. Like, it's total lucid. I have full control. Just travel to wherever the hell I want. And it feels like I'm actually there.
Right.
And I've talked to people where they're like, I swear to God, I dreamt about you last night. And it's the same exact instance. So it makes me wonder if, like, holy shit, did that actually
happen?
Do, yeah, that, no, subconsciously.
Interesting coincidences there.
Even mainstream science is fairly convinced that there are dimensions other than the three we inhabit. And if these other dimensions exist, who or what, if anything, inhabits them? Some theorists say that these dimensions exist parallel and very close to our own, although invisible to us. And if there are inhabitants in those other dimensions, it is possible that they have found a way to intrude on our dimension and become at least partially visible. If so, they could very well appear as shadows. It has long been held by psychics and other sensitives that being on other planes of existence are of different vibrations. Science is beginning to look at reality on a quantum level in the same way that particles of the smallest size exist as vibrations. Perhaps, some theorize, the vibrations of our existence are beginning to mesh with those of another dimension, with accounts for the increase in such phenomena as ghosts, shadow people, and possibly aliens. The alien and abduction phenomena are so bizarre that it's no surprise that extraterrestrials are suspects as the shadow people. Abductees have reported in many cases that the alien greys seem to be able to pass through walls and closed windows and to appear and disappear abruptly among otherworldly talents. Perhaps, too, they can go about their alien agenda disguised in the shadows.
Yep, it's definitely the aliens.
Oh my god, aliens.
Aliens!
There's a good deal of overlapping among the above ideas, of course. Aliens and ghosts could be interdimensional beings, or aliens could be time travelers, and some believe dimensions are responsible for all of these disturbing phenomena. Another thought is that seeing shadow people is a result of going through some type of trauma, with a higher percentage being in the adolescent range. For example, living in an abusive household of any kind, divorce, death, any number of things that kids struggle with and unfortunately get pushed to a mental breaking point, or having a diagnosis such as schizophrenia, and other times it could be the result of drug use, particularly doing meth or taking too much Benadryl to the point of hallucinations. Then again, sleep deprivation itself can cause hallucinations, so there's that.
Yeah, going a while without sleep, like maybe 3, 4, 5 days.
Yeah.
Maybe not even that long for some people.
Yeah, and like I was gonna say, I know that if it gets to the point in the night when I'm fighting to keep my eyes open, I can see some pretty weird shit.
The garden gnomes are coming alive!
Yeah, no, like I have had where I'm trying to push past that, where it's like, I just need to stay awake for like 5 more minutes, and I will literally start seeing people or like hands coming towards my face or something, and I'm like, nope, time to go to bed. I'm starting to have nightmares I'm awake.
That's it. Not time a thing. To fucking check out.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Going into the descriptors of these beings based on eyewitness accounts can be a blob-like cluster that sometimes has tendrils, a child-sized figure with or without a hood as if it was wearing a cloak, a tall figure with a jack-o'-lantern-sized head, and the most infamous, a tall man with a hat, usually a fedora, also known as the Hat Man or the Sleep Paralysis Demon. Shadow people are a pariah to our darkest fears, from the manifestation of trauma to the fear of the unknown. Their shape is generally male. Why, I have no idea. They just are. They are aware of us and react to our observing them. Ranging from an average of 6 to 7 feet, but can also more uncommonly range from 4 to 10 feet tall. They have a certain depth to their appearance, which is why it's hard to distinguish whether they are actually there or if it is just a typical shadow cast on the wall. They are rarely reported to have spoken or try to communicate at all. They can have a demonic shape and demeanor at times, and physical objects seem to not matter to them as they can just walk through walls. So there's a lot of different fucking...
There's a lot.
Like, yeah.
Although I feel like the whole... it being a man more often than anything else is probably because, in general, men seem to be a little bit more confrontational, usually.
Confrontational, intimidating.
Yeah.
Things like that, which I get that, too, but it's like, women can
like, less cases of that, but there's still cases.
Yeah. Generally found in homes and very often around bedrooms, they tend to lurk. They will stand in doorways and corners and just watch their victims. Fucking creepers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they will wander to a location.
The creepo.
Yeah.
Call back.
God damn you.
Here we go.
I am coming to observe. Stay right there, and I will watch you while you sleep.
Better not break the law.
Oh my god.
If you didn't understand that reference, then you need to go listen to our last episode.
Yeah, seriously. Sometimes they will wander to a location following people or stalking them. Quite often they flee around the corners or simply by going through the wall. They can just be observant or malevolent. The problem with the malevolence is that sometimes they will appear as an observer as a type of play. So you think that they are harmless and then attack you when you have your guard down. Oh, that's not terrifying at all. Some sightings of shadow people appear to be omens or portents of something bad happening, much like the legends of a bar guest or a hellhound. Similar to the lurking type, these entities are generally associated with only one person and a more transitory occurrence, stopping after the event of the tragedy has taken place. They are also the type that seem to haunt an area, such as the infamous Eastern State Penitentiary in Pennsylvania. Side note, they opened that prison as a haunted house attraction on Halloween because, you know, the actual haunting and dark energies that hang out there aren't enough.
I don't know. No.
Yeah.
No.
You don't want to go there on Halloween?
I mean, no? I do, but that's a bad idea.
Have a fucking man. Rave in the psychopath cell.
Oh, God.
Some witnesses have claimed to have been...
the base. Sorry.
Oh, my God. Some witnesses have claimed to have been attacked by these shadows, resulting in scratches, bruises, or burns.
Oh, jeez.
The figures typically follow a progression from the ambiguous blob and finally the tall man, meaning over time they take on more human appearance. In estimation, the least malevolent of this class are simply spirits that are negative in nature. At the extreme other end of the spectrum are the worst of the shadow people, the demonic shadow creatures. What they want is to express their emotions onto us. For the weaker ones, that could be the scratches and or sick feelings. Stronger entities are capable of full-on possessions, throwing objects, or shoving people. The more consistent accounts typically describe a feeling of dread associated with the presence of these phenomena.
Oh, or strangling people.
Mm.
Strangling people is also a thing they do.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, because the whole choking out thing. Animals are said to react to the phenomena with fear and hostility. Shadow beings are said to move extremely fast and travel through solid matter. They typically are said to have no discernible features such as mouths, noses, or eyes. Their forms are usually described as somewhat skeletal or thin. Direct visual contact is rarely reported by alleged eyewitnesses with shadow people. They are said to usually disappear before they can be seen clearly and are seen in the corner of one's eye. These beings are said to often appear in mirrors also.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about it before, but I've never heard of a fat shadow person.
Yeah.
Ever.
Same. It's kind of running through my mind now, too. I'm, right? Like, kind of visualizing, like, ones I've actually seen, which, again, we'll get to, and ones I've seen, like, drawings of or heard about. I've never heard of, like...
Or, like, any stories that we've read in all the research we did for this.
Jabba the Hutt came to visit me.
Jabba the Hutt!
He was just watched me in the corner of my room.
Some giant... sack of shadowy flesh.
Bring me Han Solo.
What? Instead of, bring me your soul.
Yeah. One of the more creative theories is that shadow beings are manifest thought forms known in occult circles as tulpas.
Tulpa.
Meaning that they are either collections of negative psychic energy from areas where traumatic events have taken place and evil people frequent, or have been intentionally created for some nefarious purpose. The negative psychic energy begins to manifest and takes on form and motive, thriving on fear and negative emotions for sustenance, or astral vampires, also.
Side note on tulpas,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different ways to create said tulpa, but they're fueled usually by belief in mm-hmm. them, and many things can become a tulpa, and they can be used for many different purposes. So it's not just a nefarious thing, just putting that out there.
Yeah, no, but it's like, is the point here, is it saying it's like you see something enough and you're starting to think, holy shit, it's real, and then your thought forms into energy, and then it becomes real.
Yep. I think Santa's a tulpa. I'm just putting that out there.
Wouldn't shock me.
Right?
Wouldn't shock me. Something that well regarded.
And like, highly believed in by masses. Like, yeah. I've had this conversation with my son. I'm pretty convinced that if Santa is real, it's because he's a tulpa.
Many who attach religious significance to the phenomena apply more credit to the demonic explanation. This is due to the phenomena usually being witnessed in places said to have a stigma of great negative energy. Such places include haunted locations or places where extreme emotional or physical abuse have transpired, and feelings of fear, dread, and hatred somehow linger in the atmosphere beyond the temporal passing of sad events. Some, however, have made a connection between the black smoke appearance of this phenomena and the jinn of Islamic belief. The jinn are described as normally being invisible to humans, and when seen having the appearance of black smoke, making them very similar in appearance to the phenomena of the shadow people. In Native American Cherokee mythology, there is an evil witch known as the Raven Mocker that takes the form of a spectral bird and shifts into a humanoid, shadow-like phantom. These beings are said to steal souls of the ill or dying. Such creatures are alleged to fear the shaman or medicine man and so do not enter a home where one resides. A medicine man was sought to watch over the infirm and to watch over the bodies of the recently deceased, as according to the myth, once the body was buried, the Raven Mocker could not steal the soul.
Huh. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I had never heard of that legend before this.
Me neither.
And that's, that is pretty cool. A much less held view is that the shadow people play a guardian angel role, protecting the individual from, or more accurately, warning them of impending danger, like the Mothman. Because he's seen as a portent of Doom.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, like the whole thing when he was spotted on the bridge before that huge bridge collapse, which is considered the worst bridge disaster in history.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he was supposedly just chilling on the top of the fucking thing there. And then, like, a little while later,
it collapsed.
Hundreds of people fucking died.
Wow.
Yeah. Heidi Hollis, a researcher on Shadow People, states, "Shadow People have been around since the beginning of time and are a dark influence on society. Typically, shadow beings don't like to be spotted, but they are sometimes discovered by a person who wakes up to find them trying to choke or suffocate them. The Hat Man, according to Hollis, is more akin to the devil or a demon. He also appears to be more solid than most shadow people. While different civilizations around the world once have their own versions of a sleep paralysis monster, the Hat Man seems to pop up in many different places. Even more intriguing, the description varies only slightly from one culture to another. He's sometimes 6 foot or 10 foot. His eyes might be bright red or deep pools of darkness. Some people claim that he carries a golden pocket watch or is mist-like rather than a solid figure, but everyone insists he wears a trench coat-like jacket and a very noticeable hat."
Which is the only shadow person that I've seen that has clothing some,
yeah, in some way. Yeah, distinctive clothing, yeah. Yeah. In most accounts, he is also eerily quiet. He doesn't touch you or try to attack you or sit on your chest like other sleep paralysis demons are known to do. He often just stands in the corner of the room, watching you. Sometimes he's at the foot of your bed or hovering over your chest, examining you closely.
I have heard about a couple of scenarios where the Hat Man shows up and he's standing back watching, but there are other shadow beings that are there with him. And he doesn't go up to the person, he doesn't attack them, but the others that are with him basically jump these people.
So that would make sense with the whole malevolent aspect of it, because it's like there are some people that say that he kind of just stays there, he's non-harmful, he's just an observer. But if there are other beings that show up with him, maybe he is more like of the a ringleader. Yeah. To give them orders to do it.
And after these scenarios that I was looking into, those people are always left with, like, actual marks on their skin. Like, fucking scratches and bruises. Like, they literally got the shit kicked out of them by, like, 3 or 4 people.
That's terrifying.
It is fucking terrifying.
Abby Sabota, whose Scary Tales and Interpretations of American Folklore command an audience of more than 500,000, says that the Hat Man often appears to children to feed off their negative emotions, especially those arising from trauma, and in effect, a parasite. So, honestly, I'm not surprised at all that I had my encounters with him at a young age. Not gonna go into that trauma, but I will tell you what happened to me. So, before I even knew about this entire group of entities, let alone who the hell the Hat Man was, I saw him a few times starting at about 10 years old. I would get horrific bouts of night terrors and wake up and not be able to move. And there was this tall figure, I'd probably say about 6 feet, give or take, just completely blacked out. But I distinctly remember that he had a hat on. I thought I was going fucking nuts because it could have been a coat I had hung up or one of my hats that I had a lot of because I collected a lot of hats when I was a kid.
Right.
But my coats were in my closet behind my head. And this thing was at the foot of my bed. It never actually did anything, just stood there. He didn't have red eyes or a watch.
That thing.
Yeah, but it was just a black mass of a person with a hat. And I was terrified because I couldn't move, couldn't talk. At first, I thought I was having a nightmare. Side note, usually with me, I can tell I'm having a nightmare when I try to talk and can't. But anyway, this was different. I knew I was awake, I couldn't move, I couldn't speak, and it was just standing there watching me. And I remember peeing myself. I was so scared. And I got in trouble for it because what 10-year-old pisses their bed? And that figure just stayed there until I felt like I didn't have any more energy and passed back out. I didn't see him again until we moved and my room got built in the basement because one of my new siblings, like, got a little bit older. It was like a 3-bedroom house and we had to, like,
yeah,
you know, so I got moved downstairs because I was the oldest, whatever. And I had the same experience happen 2 more times. This was when I was about 12 or 13. I've had frequent bouts of sleep paralysis, and as I've said before, it's one of the most horrifying things that I can remember, and I would almost always see shit. So, of course, I'm going into doing research on it and found out about sleep paralysis, and that was the end of it. And then I found out that the Hat Man has been seen by people all over the world, and I gotta be honest, I think it scares the hell out of me more that I realize I'm not the only one that has seen him. It went from just being another nightmare-induced hallucination to something that could possibly be very real, and I hate that I'm both fascinated and terrified by the concept.
Yeah, no, I can definitely understand that.
Yeah, so you said you also had something?
Yeah, I've had a few different encounters, but the one that I can remember most vividly, I think I was like 5 or 6, and I know that my mom had put me down for bed. I was just laying in bed, I couldn't fall asleep, and in the hallway, right outside my room door, there was a light on. We always kept the light on because, you know, kids being afraid of the dark.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting there just trying to fall asleep, and I see in the doorway a shadow-like figure that was about the size of my mom, but like a little bit shorter, and it was female. And I remember just this feeling of terror washing over me. Don't move. Don't breathe. Ugh. Don't let it know that you exist. Like, that was all of the feelings going through my head. And I could still move. I remember pulling the blanket over my face very slightly and just, I would not look away from it. Huh. And then its eyes started glowing red. It didn't present with the red eyes.
Yeah.
It progressed into that.
So almost like it noticed that you noticed it.
Yeah. And it just stood in my doorway. It wasn't like fully in the doorway. It was just kind of like almost half standing, peeking into my room. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I know that it wasn't my mother because of the fact that my mom usually sat at her computer in the living room. And the computer chair that she had was really old and very loud. So when she sat down, you would know. When she moved to get up, you would know. And I heard her sit down, and I never heard her get back up. Finally, after maybe 10 minutes or so, the thing moved out of my doorway and out of my sight. And I waited maybe 10 more minutes from that point, and then got up and peeked into the living room to see my mom still sitting at the computer. She had never moved. I asked her, "Hey, did you peek in to check in on me or anything?" And she goes, "No, I've been playing solitaire this whole time." And I'm like,
"The fuck?"
Okay. And then I just turned around, ran back into my bed, and tried my best to fall asleep under my blanket. That's the first time.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. No, it was not great. And I could never shake that feeling of terror of seeing it. And just like, I had never felt that before, you know?
So, two things. One, I noticed that, like, unlike mine, when I saw these things were a case of pretty much, like, sleep paralysis.
Right.
You said that it wasn't that for you.
No,
you were, like, fully mobile, fully awake.
Yeah. I could move, but I had that feeling wash over me of don't move, don't breathe.
So you can instinctually feel that, like, something was wrong. Okay.
This thing is dangerous. Don't fucking do anything.
Yeah, and the other thing being is that you said that was the first time, so do you have others you're wanting to share, or
I do have a few other ones, but the details are a little bit hazy because it was during a very traumatic part of my life.
Okay.
And I don't have enough
of cognitive,
to be able to recall.
No, that's totally understandable, too.
Most of the scenarios where I have had encounters with these shadow beings, I was fully cognitive. Some of them, I wasn't even laying in bed. It's like midday sort of shit.
Oh, God.
Which is, and I get a feeling.
Which is also uncommon with these things,
too. It's very uncommon, and that's why we'll get into my theories about it later, because of my personal experiences, but it feels like a whole different level.
It does, because I've never really talked to anybody I personally know, anyway, that have had these experiences besides yourself, that we're fully awake or middle of day or something like that, and it's just, it's almost always like mine, where it's either sleep paralysis or it's at least at night or something.
Right.
That they see these things. So that's kind of, you know, kind of off the wall about that.
It is. I actually do have a couple of people that I've talked to that have had semi-similar experiences, but without saying any names, one of the people that I talked to was saying that there was kind of like a shadow entity that's always been attached to them, and it will just present itself throughout the day in their house, and friends have come over and actually seen the thing, felt its energy during the day.
That's terrifying.
And a couple of her friends actually got scared out of her house.
Oh my God.
And that's like one of the three other people I've heard say similar things to that, but they always present as like shadow figures.
I did find a few other stories that I'd like to share from an article. It's titled Encountering the Shadow People. just to add on to ours, because, you know, to show you guys that we're not nuts, we're not the only ones, and I don't know if any of you that are listening have had experiences yourselves. If you do, please feel free to share in, you know, our Facebook page or anything else like that, because we'd love to hear about it if you're willing to, and we will promise anonymity if that's what you're comfortable with. If not, just enjoy listening. But anyway, we have a few other theories and some creepy experiences written by the few submitted authors. The first one is from MSF, and they write, "I became aware of the shadow shortly after moving into my new house in New Jersey. My daughter's playroom was in the basement, and they were constantly complaining that they were always seeing something move out of the corners of their eyes. My youngest also said that they hovered near the ceiling. In later years, I had my floral workshop in the basement and saw them constantly. It got to the point where I would talk to them with my mind. Not that they ever answered back. They were black. We saw them all over the basement, but mostly along one wall, and occasionally saw them among the same wall on the first floor and in the kitchen near the back door. We did not see them anywhere else in the house or elsewhere on the property, but even when we did not get a glimpse of them, we were aware when they were present. Some of them seemed to have an evil presence. A few years after we moved in, I told them that they were not welcome in the house and the evil presence seemed to go away. Still, we had an uneasy feeling about them. Not fear, we just accepted that they were there, as several steps taken over the years to make them go away didn't work anyway. Only once after the evil ones were told they were just not welcome was I aware they came back, and I am not sure if they were evil or just upset. I will explain later. Only once did I see one clearly, but it happened in a split second and I did not see it from top to bottom. I was walking through the breakfast room in the kitchen. The kitchen light was on in the corner. It was by the back door in front of the stove. I was startled. I thought someone had come into the house. It all happened very fast, but the light from behind it did not pass through as it would a shadow. It was short and stocky and appeared as a silhouette of a person. It had a head. There were no discernible features, including no eyes, shoulders, arms, and a torso. It disappeared too fast to take note if it had legs or feet. I sensed it was as surprised as I was and did not intend to be seen."
Huh, that's interesting. And then the short and stocky thing.
Yeah, again,
that's new.
No, because as I said before, it can appear like childlike, anywhere from 4 to 10 feet tall. Like, so there are right. very different height differences in this.
I just think it's really funny that there's no fat shadow people. We're coming back to that. There's no fat shadow people.
Well, I mean, it said short and stocky.
I know,
so
that's the closest thing we've seen yeah. to that sort of.
He's an angry elf.
Or an angry dwarf.
Oh my god. Ah. She continues on saying, "Then our house caught fire." Holy shit. That
wow.
escalated quickly.
That really did escalate quickly. Was not expecting that twist.
It went from an angry elf to fire. Fuck.
Burn the flower beds. There might be money underneath.
Sorry. It was a major fire that started from a shorted TV along the wall of shadows in the den. We were out of the house 6 months while it was repaired. About a week after the fire, I stopped by right before dark to pick up a few things. As I came onto the back porch and looked through the 6-foot hole where the picture window once was, I looked across the breakfast room at the basement doorway. I sensed 3 shadows near the doorway. It was almost dark outside, so I did not actually see them. Like, she just kind of felt that they were there, I guess.
Yeah.
I've had that experience before.
That too. Yeah.
Like, when we went on that, the trip to the
Leffingwell House?
Yeah, Leffingwell House.
Yeah.
As soon as I got up the stairs, like, and I turned right, I could see nothing in that room because it was pitch black. I just got this overwhelming sense of dread.
That's the feeling
something
that someone was right there.
Was right there. Mm. And I, like, it was compelling me to go into the room, but at the same time, I'm like, you
nope.
don't want to fucking go in there.
But
at least not
shit.
By yourself. Yeah, no. Which will come later. We are still trying to figure out all the video editing and all that shit of an actual paranormal investigation.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. I also got a very bad feeling about them and told them by thought that evil ones were still not welcome in the house, whether I was there or not. Then I turned and left without entering the house. I was quite rattled. Whether I had this feeling because I was also emotionally upset about the fire, I cannot say. The next day I went back and it seemed the house was full of shadows. Although I only caught a glimpse of them, as usual, fleeing in the basement, and I am not sure really I saw them as there were no lights on down there and the only light was from the window well windows. It was the only time I ever sensed that they tried to communicate. It seemed they were upset that we were not there because the house was all black. There was no light for them in the kitchen, and there were strangers in the house, the workers, every day. A few weeks later, burglars tried to steal the new appliances for the house. Everything was left in the kitchen by the back door.
Wow.
Yeah. My daughters and I joke that they met up with the shadows and were scared off. Who knows? Maybe.
That's hilarious.
You just see, like, trying to carry a big-ass stove out the back door. What the fuck is that? And it's just, like, standing there. Like, put it down, staring, bitch.
Like, excuse you. You don't fucking belong here. Get out.
That's my house.
It's my motherfucking house.
It's my stove. Put it down, bitch.
Be like, leave the new shiny.
The next one is from Jason, and he writes, I've always been very observant, and I notice everything around me in detail. When I was 13, I was riding home from the supermarket with my older brother. All of a sudden, a dark figure dove under the car. It happened very quickly, but I saw it straight on. It was definitely in the shape of a man, and it seemed to appear out of nowhere. I just saw a shadow man, I said to my brother. Of course, he made a joke of it. I went along with it, but it was more than a joke to me. I saw another shadow man that very night. I got out of bed and to go to the bathroom. I know it was not my mind playing tricks. It was probably, he probably stuck to, like, the bottom of the fucking car. Like, he held on to the fucking wheel bolts.
He's like, yep, alright, I'm coming home with you bitches.
Oh my god.
I need a new home.
Next, we have Jean, and they write, I've seen shadow people at least twice. The most recent was while sitting in front of a TV that was turned off. The reflection showed a dark entity seated beside me.
Oh, no.
I was annoyed, and soon it was gone. I hope I never have another experience like it again.
Annoyed?
Annoyed. That's an odd feeling.
That's a very odd,
like,
way to deal with
that. Like, you see a fucking ghost thing sitting next to you in the reflection of the TV,
you're like, come on, man.
Really, bitch?
What the fuck?
I'm trying to enjoy this shit by myself.
There's nothing like, on the TV. Why are you even here?
How dare you, sir? A long time ago, I saw what appeared to be a man wearing a top hat who moved in the shadows of a great building. He appeared to look almost like a phantom, appearing as though he were a sail mast consisting of electrical magnetic signals. That is a hell of a description.
Right?
I'm trying to picture that, and I can't.
Nope.
Like, I can picture an antenna like casting magnetic signals, but not a sail mast? Like, I'm not making fun of the author. I'm really not. I'm just trying to picture what they're describing, and it's
not
difficult.
Not a tangible thought for me.
Anyway, next is DM, and they write, I have recurring visitations from a life form that I call the blue people. They don't really look like humans, though. They are about 4 feet tall, they walk erect on legs, but the knees bent backward. That's terrifying.
This is aliens.
They have 4 fingers and 2 thumbs and roughly the same configuration on their feet. The toes and fingers are webbed. They have no shoulders and no neck. Them's fucking aliens.
Them's definitely aliens.
They just go up from the shoulders onto a bulbous head. The face consists of 3 crescents that are arched down like a grimace. The shortest on top and the longest at the bottom. They are blue.
I love the they are blue sentence.
They have visited me for about 5 years now, to my knowledge. They come late at night when everything is quiet. The first thing that wakes me is a high-pitched whine that is followed by a white light that appears through the wall, door, or whatever they choose to enter from. They come in through the light when it opens enough for them to pass. I was quite scared at first and thought I was having a lucid nightmare. Later, though, when they returned several times, I realized that they were benevolent and only curious about this world. They would walk about my room, look at things, and try to touch things. For a long time, when I tried to speak with them, they would rush back into the light and disappear. I tried everything to set up some kind of communication. Only recently did I have a breakthrough of sorts. When I opened my mouth to speak, one of them rushed over and put his hand on my mouth. I got quiet, and it touched my eyes, and then touched my ears. Then it touched the 3 crescents on its face, touched my eyes and ears again. One thing I must interject is that they have no physical form here. I mean, they are kind of like ghosts, so when I say they touched me, it wasn't really like being touched. It took me a while to put it all together, but I have done so, and the message is that they see with sound. My voice has blinded them and scared them, and may even have injured them. I think that they are dimensional explorers, and I think that they would like to communicate. I am working on different approaches to doing that. Okay. I
don't have words. I'm just blinking a lot.
Yeah. Them's aliens, dude.
Them's definitely aliens.
I don't know what else to explain.
I mean, it would probably go along the lines of the interdimensional travelers, like they said, but like...
I've never heard of ones described like that, though, ever.
Never.
I've never heard ever. Aliens described like that.
No.
So, that's kind of odd. And interesting, but odd. Our next story, moving on, is from Barbara, and she writes, I have been seeing something similar to shadow people for a long time now. Although the shadows I see don't look like people exactly, they are in bottom corners of the house. I see them from the corner of my eye, and they are smoky, but they are shapeless and dissipate as soon as I look head-on at them, usually around a corner. I definitely get a malevolent feeling from them, though. I always believe them to be demons, and still do. And as I don't believe in life after death or aliens and ghosts, I am seeing a psychiatrist for clinical depression and finally told him about it as it was bothering me. Bad move.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you right now, bad move. I'm sorry. I told him I thought I was going crazy, and of course he immediately put me on a psychotropic drug and wanted to know if I heard voices too, which I thought was crazy. This is why it's a bad move.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been on drug long enough to see if it will change my seeing them. Somehow I get the feeling just having told someone that I won't see them anymore, though. Would that be a placebo effect? Probably, seeing as you seem very cognitive and not a... You know, this person doesn't seem like they have any other symptoms of things like schizophrenia or something, but if you go to a psychiatrist and tell them that you are seeing fucking ghosts or shadows or other things like that, they're automatically going to assume.
Yeah.
That you have something wrong with you and shove pills down your throat. I'm not discrediting it. Some people need it. Some people do have these conditions. It sucks, but they do. But this person doesn't seem like they have a history of it.
I mean, it's hard to tell in a couple of paragraphs. Like, obviously, we can't really make too many assumptions based off of two paragraphs. But from how it's presented, they don't
yes.
seem to be...
Which,
ill.
In just this thing alone where, you know, they say that they are given a medication and then the doctor also asks if they hear voices and that person thinks that the doctor's crazy for asking that. It goes into that whole crazy people don't know that they're crazy. I mean, I can understand if it was, like, for years and years she's, like, seen these horrible visions or heard constant voices in her head, which are two of the typical signs of schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And then gone to a psychiatrist and then got, you know, diagnosed with it after... You know, either being misdiagnosed or not diagnosed at all.
Mm-hmm.
But this just seems like a person that saw some shit and then went to the doctor and had to deal with the typical medical bullshit.
Here, take this drug.
Yeah. Take this drug to make the things go away. And when they don't, we'll just pump you with more. I want to keep the podcast focused on content that entertains, informs, and is mindful of your time. One way to accomplish this is direct listener support. Your support would help the show grow so much, so I've set up a link where you can quickly and easily support the show. The whole thing will take 30 seconds. It's glow.fm/somethingwicked. That's glow.fm/somethingwicked. We're asking for $3 a month, but you can contribute as much or as little as you'd like. If Something Wicked is part of your day or week and you love what we're doing, please visit glow.fm/somethingwicked and support us any way you can today. It's dead simple, and again, will take no more than 30 seconds. Click the link in the show notes, pay with Apple or Google Pay, and click the link of the podcast player that you want to use. You can listen anywhere at any time. Happy listening! Next, we have Manda, and they write, I'm pretty sure the shadow people are demons. One night, I was having a party, and I had just gotten a Ouija board for my birthday.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Everyone talked me into using it, so we started playing.
And here we go.
Oh, my God. Then weird stuff started happening. Shadow figures started to appear in my room, and a lot of shadow people. It wasn't any of our shadows. These were different. Some had red eyes. Then red orbs started coming through my room. We made a protective circle, and we all tried to stay in it. It got really cold in my room, and we could all see our breath. If some of my friends couldn't see the shadow people, they could feel them. There was an all-out evil feeling in the room. We got too freaked out to move. We were just like, whoa. Then one of the shadow people changed. They got all scary looking. I could explain, but I don't want to go into detail. Let's just say Pumpkinhead, the demon guy from the scary movies. No, his head is not a pumpkin. So we screamed and finally ran out of the room. My parents thought we were crazy. That night when we went to bed, my closets were glowing red and orbs were going through my room. We didn't sleep until like 5 a.m. and even then we only slept not even 4 hours. That was freaky, and stuff didn't die down for a while after that. That was the last time I used the Ouija board. I threw it somewhere deep down in one of my closets. Now I've only used the psychic circle, and even that has consequences. Well, no shit. It's the same fucking thing, except for the added bonus of added phrases instead of just yes or no. It's literally the same fucking thing, just a circle board instead of a fucking rectangle.
What the fuck?
Oh my god. I'm not allowed to use that anymore because of what happened to me, my friend, and my mom, but that is another story for another time.
Why? Why do you keep doing these things? You obviously opened up something you shouldn't fucking opened up. Sorry.
The square is evil. Let's try the circle. I'm just...
The square is evil. Let's try the circle. I'm holding on to that one.
It makes no sense.
I'm sorry. I know I'm definitely extremely biased when it comes to the use of Ouija boards, but like, unless you're doing it properly, don't fucking do it.
Don't do it at like a fucking slumber party.
No, it is not a toy. I know it might be marketed as a toy, and I know we've gone over this probably several times throughout this podcast, but just don't fucking do it.
Just don't.
Unless you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally know what you're doing. Not one of those, yeah, I know what I'm doing. No, fucking actually know what you're doing.
On top of the fact that I think their house was just straight up haunted to begin with, because if you were having that much fucking activity,
like,
off
after
of one session, and you created the protective circle after you started using it, that's not gonna help you, honey. I'm sorry, it's not. Learn to use your tools before you do anything.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Sorry. Those kinds of scenarios tend to get us fucking going, because, my god.
So we're just gonna cut that off before it turns into a 10-hour tangent.
Yep, no, because it will.
Next is Miss Lady, and she says, I research all things of the paranormal, UFOs, and ancient civilizations as a hobby of mine.
Same.
I recall an article about aliens that have visited Earth before. The Mayan gods Quetzalcoatl and Tezcatlipoca were Drac brothers. This article said that these Drac humanoids, identified by such numerous names as dragons, snakes, serpents, Quetzalcoatl, and Tezcatlipoca, were from the constellation of Draco, which means dragon, and which was named after these Drac humanoids. This was along with the constellation of Lacerda, which means lizard, another reptilian race that came to Earth at one time. They were worshipped mostly in Mexico. Anyway, it is said that Quetzalcoatl and Tezcatlipoca could disguise themselves as various humanoids, and because the Dracs exist in another frequency range, they can control the ability to partially appear in and out of our frequency range, and that sometimes only their shadows or their wings will appear.
Oh, that's neat.
Could this be what people are seeing with shadow people? Could all our legends of devils, gargoyles, serpent gods, mothmen, and dragons be of these creatures? And maybe the reason they are seeing more shadow people is because they are increasing in number. That's an interesting theory.
Very interesting theory.
And last, we have Brandon W., and he writes, I was reading your article on the shadow people and noticed that you overlooked an obvious theory, the Mothman, even though it was mentioned a couple times. Am I the only one that noticed this? Some of the descriptions and sketches of the shadow people seem very similar to the Mothman. The black shadowy figure, the glowing red eyes, and the feeling of dread. All of these have at some point been used in descriptions of the Mothman and the shadow people. Maybe these shadow people are the same beings as the Mothman. Okay, the Mothman had a little more power in his hypnotic abilities, the electrical disturbances that occurred when he was around. Perhaps this was some kind of super shadow being. Yeah, I know that sounds corny. Mothman sightings have recently just sprouted up again around the world, and these shadow people have just recently begun letting themselves be seen easier. Maybe they are one and the same. Yes, there are similarities between that legend and the shadow people, but they have been around forever.
Yeah.
The Mothman has at least notably been around since the 50s.
Right.
Which we will get into that when we do like a cryptid episode on him, because I have been doing personal research on the Mothman and stuff like that, and is finding out interesting information and theories in itself of that. So Now, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of these encounters. One of my sources that I found, in fact, is an entire site dedicated to collecting stories of these experiences since the creator had his experience when he was a teenager. He feels that he has figured out who the Hat Man is and wants to share this information with everyone and has written a book on the subject called The Hat Man Revealed. I will link his site down below if you'd like to read more stories of eyewitness accounts and get a link to the book. The last bit of information on the paranormal aspect of what the shadow people could be is what I believe to be a rather interesting explanation, which is that, as one theory suggests, a djinn. Before I go into the article I found, let me give you a bit of a background on what exactly a djinn is for those that don't know. That's right, folks, it's time for a History Horse Anonymous segment! Djinn is an Arabic collective noun deriving from the Semitic root jinn, so J-N-N, whose primary meaning is to hide or to adapt. Some authors interpret the word to mean literally beings that are concealed from the senses. Jinn also romanticized spelling of D-J-I-N-N, or anglicized as genies, two completely different things, BT-dubs, are invisible creatures in early pre-Islamic Arabia and later in Islamic culture or beliefs. Like humans, they are accountable for their deeds, can be either believers or non-believers of the faith, depending on whether or not they accept God's guidance. The origin of the word jinn remains uncertain. Some scholars relate the Arabic term jinn to the Latin genius, a guardian spirit of people and places in Roman religion. As a result of syncretism, during the reign of the Roman Empire under Tiberius and Augustus, however, this derivation is also disputed. Another suggestion holds that the djinn may be derived from Aramaic Ganaya, with the meaning of tutelary or deity or guardian. Others claim a Persian origin of the word, in the form of Avestic Jaini, a wicked female spirit. Jaini were among various creatures in the possible even pre-Zoroastrian mythology of peoples of Iran. Wenzik advocates a purely Arabic origin of the term, asserting that according to the common Semitic view, psychic and bodily afflictions are caused by spirits. An object reacting upon such an effect would be an incarnation of the said spirit. Since these spirits are covered from the sight of humans, they would have been called djinn. The anglicized form genie is borrowing of the French djinni, also from the Latin genius. It first appeared in the 18th century translations of 1001 Nights from the French, where it had been used owing to its rough similarity in the sound and sense, and further applies to benevolent intermediary spirits, in contrast to the malevolent spirits called demon and heavenly angels in literature. In Assyrian art, creatures ontologically between humans and divinities are also called genii. Although the term spirit is frequently used, it has been criticized for not capturing the corporeal nature of the djinn and that the term genie should be used instead. So that's why we get genie instead of djinn, why people think that it's two different things. Because technically it is, when in a sense genie is just, like they said, an anglicized version.
Right.
Hence we get things like, you know, genie from Aladdin.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Because that's the first thing any of us here think of.
Because they don't want to think of the djinn, which the pre-Islamic religion feels as, like, these evil beings that just, like, want to attack you and manipulate and all this other shit.
Which is really funny, because when I hear djinn, it makes me think of Supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
So Supernatural and Aladdin both come to mind when thinking of djinn and genies.
It is the polar opposite.
Exactly.
Because genie is a benevolent creature
who's actually like a guardian helping.
The djinn from Supernatural literally kidnapped people and then induced them with false paradises to feed off them slowly until they die.
Exactly.
Though not a precise fit, descriptive analogies that have been used for these beings in Western thought include demon, spirit, and fairy, depending on source.
That is extremely interesting, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the fairy mythology is just like a trickster sort of thing.
And exactly.
In the shadow people.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Exactly. Yeah, no, and I will get to this.
Oh,
like,
I'm sorry.
How many of why, like, this makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
The exact origins of belief in djinn are not entirely clear. Belief in djinn in the pre-Islamic Arab religion is testified not only by the Quran, but also by pre-Islamic literature in the 7th century. Some scholars of the Middle East hold that they originated as malevolent spirits residing in deserts and unclean places, who often took the forms of animals. Others hold that they were originally pagan nature deities who gradually became marginalized as other deities took greater importance. Since the term djinn seems to not be of Arabic or Aramaic origin, denoting demonized pagan deities, the jinn probably entered Arabian belief in the late pre-Islamic period.
Huh, that's a lot to chew on right there.
Still, jinn had been worshipped by many Arabs during the pre-Islamic period, though. Unlike gods, jinn were not regarded as immortal. Emily Savage Smith, which, holy stage name, Batman. I mean, it's an awesome name, but anyway. Who asserted that jinn are malevolent in contrast to benevolent gods does not hold this distinction to be absolute. In the regions north to the Hejaz, Palmyra, and Baalbek, the terms jinni and ilah were often used interchangeably. Julius Wellhausen likewise states that in the pre-Islamic Arabia, it was assumed that there are friendly and helpful beings among the jinn. He asserts that the distinction between a god and a jinni is the jinn are worshipped in private while the gods are worshipped in public.
Huh, okay.
Although their mortality ranks them lower than gods, it seems that the veneration of jinn had played more importance in the everyday life of pre-Islamic Arabs than the gods themselves. According to common Arabian belief, soothsayers, pre-Islamic philosophers, and poets were inspired by the jinn. Their culture and society were analogous to the pre-Islamic Arabian culture, having tribal leaders, protecting their allies, and avenging murder for any member of their tribe or allies. Although the powers of jinn exceed those of humans, it is conceivable of a man could kill a jinn in a single combat. Jinn were thought to shift into different shapes, but were feared especially in their invisible form since they could attack without being seen. Jinn were also feared because they have been thought to be responsible for various diseases and mental illnesses.
I mean, if there's a bad jinn that's just kind of like fucking with you.
Yeah.
Make you seem like a schizo.
Pretty much. Julius Wellhausen observed that such spirits were thought to inhabit desolate, dingy, and dark places, and that they were feared. One had to protect oneself from them, but they were not the objects of a true cult. Al-Yahiz credits the pre-Islamic Arabs with believing that the society of jinn constitutes several tribes and groups, and some natural events were attributed to them, such as storms. They also thought jinn could protect, marry, kidnap, possess, and kill people.
That's yeah. A long list of shit.
Mm-hmm. All in one! No, I'm kidding.
I'll protect you until I get... No, I'll kidnap you.
And I'll then protect you, then marry you, kidnap you, possess you, and then kill you. You know what? I don't think this relationship's gonna work out.
No.
Just saying.
No thanks.
No thanks.
I don't want to sign on to that.
I'll pass. Hard pass.
Hard pass.
Despite
Full
that...
Full stop. Okay, sorry.
Despite that they were often feared, or they inspired awe, the jinn were also pictured to have romantic feelings for humans. According to a famous pre-Islamic history, the jinn Manzur fell in love with a human woman called Haba, teaching her the arts of healing.
Haba.
Some scholars argue that angels and devils were introduced by the Islamic prophet Muhammad to Arabia and did not exist among the jinn. On the other hand, Amira El-Zain argues that angels were known to the pagan Arabs, but the term jinn was used for all kinds of supernatural entities among various religions and cults. Thus, Zoroastrian, Christian, and Jewish angels and devils were conflated with jinn. Since jinn are neither innately evil or innately good, Islam acknowledged spirits from other religions and was able to adopt them during its expansion.
Oh, that's nice.
Jinn are not strictly an Islamic concept. They may represent several pagan beliefs integrated into Islam. To assert strict monotheism and the Islamic concept of Tawhid, or oneness with God, Islam denies all affinities between the jinn and God, thus placing the jinn parallel to humans, also subject to God's judgment and afterlife. The Quran condemns the pre-Islamic Arabian practice of worshipping or seeking protection from them. Although generally invisible, jinn are supposed to be composed of thin and subtle bodies and can change at will. They favor a snake form, but can also appear as scorpions, lizards, or humans. They may even engage in sexual affairs with humans and produce offspring.
Huh. That's fun.
If they are injured by someone, they usually seek revenge or possess the assailant's body, refusing to leave until forced to do so by an exorcism. Jinn do not usually meddle in human affairs, preferring to live with their own kind in tribes similar to those of pre-Islamic Arabia. Individual jinn appear on charms or talismans. They are called upon for protection or magical aid, often under the leadership of a king. Many people who believe in jinn wear amulets to protect themselves against the assaults of jinn, sent out by sorcerers and witches. A commonly held belief maintains that jinn cannot hurt someone who wears something with the name of God written on it. While some Muslim scholars in the past have had ambivalent attitudes towards sorcery, believing that good jinn do not require one to commit sin, most contemporary Muslim scholars associate dealing with the jinn idolatry. The notion that jinn can possess individuals is generally accepted by the majority of Muslim scholars and considered part of the doctrines of the people of Sunnah. In the tradition of Ash'ari, a minority of Muslim scholars associated with the Mu'tazila denied that jinn could possess a human physically, asserting that they could only influence humans by whispering to them, like devils do. Some, like Ibn Sina, even deny their existence altogether. Skeptics refuse to believe in a literal reading on jinn in Islamic sacred texts, preferring to view them as unruly men or metaphorical.
Unruly men.
Yeah. Other critics, as Yahiz and Masudi, explain jinn as demons as merely a psychological phenomena. Yahiz states in his Kitab al-Hayawan that loneliness induces humans to mind games and wishful thinking, causing demonic whisperings in the minds, causing a fearful man to see things which are not real. These alleged appearances are told to other generations in bedtime stories and poems, and when they grow up, they remember these stories when they are alone or afraid, encouraging their imaginations and causing other alleged sightings of the jinn. According to the Asharites, the existence of jinn and demons cannot be proven or falsified because arguments concerning the existence of such entities are beyond human comprehension.
Yeah, I feel that.
Adepts of Ash'ari theology explain that jinn are invisible to humans because humans lack the appropriate sensory organs to envision them. Hanabi scholar Ibn Taymiyyah and Zahiri scholar Ibn Hazm regarded denial of jinn as unbelief, since they are mentioned in the Islamic sacred texts. They further point towards demons and spirits in other religions such as Christianity, Zoroastrianism, and Judaism as evidence for their existence. Ibn Taymiyyah believed that the jinn to be generally ignorant, untruthful, oppressive, and treacherous. He held that the jinn account for much of the magic that is perceived by humans, cooperating with magicians to lift items in the air, delivering hidden truths to fortune tellers, and mimicking the voices of deceased humans during seances.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's fucked.
So he's basically saying that they are, like, behind every fucking magic aspect in the world.
Oh my god.
Al-Maturidi relates the jinn to their depiction as former minor deities, writing that humans seek refuge among the jinn, but the jinn are actually weaker than humans. Not the jinn, but humans' own mind and attitude towards them are the sources of fear. By submitting to the jinn, humans allow the jinn to have power over them, humiliate themselves, increase their dependence on them, and commit shirk. In other words, invoking or praying to the jinn rather than Allah.
Right.
Since the Quran affirms their existence, when Islam spread outside of Arabia, jinn belief was adopted by later Islamic culture. The Quran reduced the status of the jinn from that of tutelary deities to something parallel to humans, subject to the judgment of supreme deity of Islam. By that, the jinn were considered a third class of invisible beings, not consequently equated with devils, and Islam was able to integrate local beliefs about spirits and deities from Iran, Africa, Turkey, and India into a monotheistic framework. Muslim jinn are thought to be benign. Christian and Jewish jinn are indifferent, and pagan jinn, evil.
Yeah.
Of course.
That sounds about right.
Other common characteristics include fear of iron and wolves, generally appearing in desolate or abandoned places and being stronger and faster than humans. Night is considered a particularly dangerous time because the jinn would then leave their hiding places. Iron and wolves. Okay, so iron says fairies to me.
Or, like, anything from the spiritual realm, iron seems to have a...
Yeah.
An effect on...
But wolves?
Wolves is very confusing.
I mean, maybe it's just specific to them, because I've never heard of wolves being a deterrent of any other type of
I mean, thing. Other than the fact that wolves are fucking scary sometimes, Jesus Christ.
They are puppies.
But they're so cute. They're so cute. Did you know that wolves can purr? I'm pretty sure. That might be a lie. But I think
I'm gonna look that shit up. That sounds weird.
And I'm gonna confirm that in a moment because I don't want that on the podcast if I'm wrong.
So we looked it up, and, you know, wolves don't purr because they're fucking dogs.
I'm just fucking wrong.
Apparently the thing was, is lions can't purr.
That's still unconfirmed. We don't know if that's true or not. But I'm pretty sure I heard somewhere that if they can roar, they can't purr. But that was, I was just wrong about the wolf thing, so I'm probably wrong.
But that would
that
make
too.
More sense because lions are cats.
I know.
Just wolves are dogs. I love you, Tori.
But they can't purr. They can't. They might not purr.
If I hear a wolf purr, I think I'm more scared of it.
No, that's wrong.
No, that's not wrong. No, just no. Stop.
I'm fucking crying right now.
Anyway, getting back to it, Jenner often believed to be able to take control over a human's body. Although this is a strong belief among many Muslims, some authors argue that since the Quran doesn't explicitly attribute possession to the jinn, it derives from pre-Islamic beliefs. Morocco especially has many possession traditions, including exorcism rituals. However, jinn cannot enter a person whenever it wants, rather the victim must be predisposed for possession in a state of weakness, feelings of insecurity, mental instability, unhappy love, and or depression.
You know, that makes a lot of sense, though. Mm-hmm. You know, your guard is down because you're feeling indisposed in some way or another.
Hence one of the steps of possession being oppression.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Mm. Break your person down enough, and then they're like, yeah, sure, whatever, add a demon, I don't give a fuck anymore.
Exactly! You know, fucking one more demon, oh well. Oh, this one talks more.
Yeah. Until it's like, you know what, I don't like this, what the fuck is this? It's anxiety, oh my god. Nope, get me the fuck out of this body.
What the fuck is this feeling? Lower back pain? Fucking scoliosis? What? The fuck is that?
Javanese Muslims hold similar beliefs about the jinn as inhabiting lonely and haunted places and the ability to possess or scare people who trample their homes or accidentally kill a related jinni.
How do you accidentally kill one?
I don't know.
That's a good fucking question.
In some cases, jinn might even take revenge by inflicting physical damage. Muslims avoid hurting jinn by uttering permission before sprinkling hot water so the jinn might leave the place.
What?
That's odd.
That is very odd.
That is very odd.
Have to look into that more, because that doesn't make any sense out of context.
Some jinn guard graves and cause illness to people who intend to disturb the graves. Benevolent jinn are called jinn Islam, and they are pious and faithful. The other are called jinn kafir. While good jinn might even help a Muslim do hard work and produce magical acts, evil jinn follow the influence of devils. In Artas, Bethlehem, benevolent jinn might support humans and teach them moral lessons. The evil jinn frequently ascend to the surface, causing sickness to children, snatching food, and taking revenge when humans mistreat them. In later Albanian lore, too, the jinn, or pronounced jindi, live either on earth or under the surface rather than in the air, and may possess people who have insulted them. For example, if their children are trodden upon or hot water is thrown on them. In Senegal, jinn are believed to provide magical aid if the powers of a spiritual healer are too weak. Like in previously mentioned regions, jinn can also be dangerous. They can scare or devour a human being if they desire.
Devour, that's a new
That's
one.
A hell of a step.
Right? That's escalated.
See, scaring you is not working. Let me try eating you. Like the fuck?
I'm going to eat your face.
Therefore, most people try to avoid contacting jinn or offer gifts when it is believed jinn are preying on a human. Among Turks, jinn often...
I'm sorry, that sounds very fey. That sounds very fey.
It does. Among Turks, jinn often appear along with other demonic entities, such as the divs, as within Azerbaijani mythology. The divs are from Persian mythology. Some early Persian translations of the Quran translated jinn as peri, or fairy,
hey!
And used div for evil spirits, such as Shayadin and Iblis. In some variations of Turkic language, the jinn are known as kor and kort, distinguished from iye. While the iye is bound to a specific place, Turkish sources too describe jinn as mobile creatures causing illness and mental disorders within a physical body, which only remains invisible until they die, and inhabiting desolated places. The term in, also used in the form of insin, has the same meaning as jinn. Insin are used in Turkish phrases to refer to a place so deserted Such beings, which usually hide from sight, would gather around this place, such as Insin Tap Onoyer, as in playing ball with the djinn, so I guess playing a game with the djinn, like mind games or whatever. In Central Asia, shamanism, djinn might aid shamans as familiars to protect against malicious spirits, a practice taken up by the Muslim guides in the 19th century. Amira Al-Zin, author of Islam, Arabs, and the Intelligent World of the Djinn, wrote, "As spiritual entities, the djinn are considered dual-dimensional, with the ability to live and operate in both manifest and invisible domains. The Arabs of pre-Islam invented a whole set of exorcism procedures to protect themselves from the evil actions of the djinn on their bodies and minds, such as the use of beads, incense, bones, salt, and charms written in Arabic, Hebrew, and Syriac, or the hanging around their necks of a dead animal's teeth, such as a fox or cat, to frighten the djinn and keep them away."
Dude, yeah. That guy looks creepy. Fuck that guy.
According to this source site, djinn are made from fire without smoke, and their existence is not subject to the laws of time and space. For the ancient Semites, djinn were spirits of ancient vanished peoples who acted during the night and disappeared with the first light of dawn. These spirits were commonly believed to be responsible for diseases and for the manics of some lunatics. The djinn are tied so much with a lot of folklore, including fiery djinn, often confused with ifrits or fire demons, yeah. Animalistic djinn in the form of black dogs, black cats, or vermin, kawabis, or male sex demons, a.k.a. incubi, carinat,
yep.
Or female sex demons, a.k.a. succubi, devas or fairies, and palis, or vampire-type creatures from Persian lore, which are actually cringy as hell because they suck your blood by licking your feet while you sleep.
What?
Yeah.
I've never heard of them before.
That's weird. I don't know how.
That is really weird.
That's possible. Side note, also like fairies, the djinn had no souls and were once spirits of nature. They can be male or female and exist independently or attached to inanimate objects and reside in the void between worlds.
That explains the lamps. Just kidding. I know that's different, but, like, that explains lamps.
And one of today's leading experts in the field of paranormal favors this theory over all others that the shadow people are, in fact, djinn. I found an article from Psychology Today where forensic psychologist Dr. Catherine Ramsland, sorry, I'm obsessed with her, sat down with Rosemary Guiley to interview her on her theory. Sorry for the squee, but I'm having a total fangirl moment, so I found out that she did an interview article on the topic of shadow people, and I lost my shit.
Yeah, no, like, I get that.
So, Catherine Ramsland is a professor of forensic psychology at DeSales University in Lee County, Pennsylvania. She has appeared on more than 200 crime documentaries and magazine shows, is an executive producer of Murder House Flip, and consulted for CSI, Bones, and The Alienist.
Which, I really want to see Murder House Flip, just saying.
Yeah! The author of more than 1,500 articles and 70 books, including How to Catch a Killer, The Psychology of Death Investigations, and The Mind of a Murderer, she worked with the BTK serial killer Dennis Rader on his autobiography. Dr. Ramsland currently pens the Shadowboxing blog at Psychology Today and teaches seminars on extreme offenders to death investigations and homicide detectives. Years ago, she wrote a biography of Anne Rice. The biography on Dr. Ramsland's mother, who told her ghost stories, led to her nonfiction books that explored ghost stories. One of the most noted was the book Piercing the Darkness, Undercover with Vampires in America Today, which digs deep into the terrifying world of modern vampirism to expose the myths and realities of the community. This book was an amazing read, was an outcome of Anne's biography, and involved the disappearance of Susan Walsh, who herself was an investigative reporter. She was not only Anne's personal biographer, but she also wrote The Vampire Companion for her, which is essentially a guidebook to the Vampire Chronicles.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Like, this... I fucking love this woman. She is so involved and knowledgeable in the subjects of true crime and explores scientific approaches to the supernatural with an open mind. If there is one thing I could recommend on getting your hands on, because it is definitely worth the read, because it's such a beautiful blend of true crime and paranormal, is her book Blood and Ghosts, Haunted Crime Scene Investigations.
Ooh.
In it, Dr. Ramsland and Mark Nesbitt, a paranormal investigator, examine tales of ghosts and murder, police psychics, and scientific experiments. So, what if forensic paranormal investigation deliberately crossed paths? Can forensics aid ghost hunters who use these tools one day assist in the cause of justice? Forensics is an applied science, and many of its sub-disciplines have a kinship with ghost hunting. Its tools and technology were devised to record and analyze evidence or behavior. Given this shared approach to solving mysteries, it makes sense to see how these disciplines could be brought together, from missing persons to mass and serial murder. It's time we use all of our best resources to solve a crime.
Yeah, or a haunting, because, I mean, still, that should be classified under a crime if it's something malevolent.
Yeah. No, but that's why I freaking love this book so much. They go to crime scenes and just use everything possible, from, like, trying to communicate with the people to, like, actually figuring out police evidence. They go to crime scenes and just deconstruct everything from every angle, paranormal or evidence-based.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah. And it's such a good read.
Seriously, this is what I look forward to, though, is the marriage of the paranormal and science, because of the fact that that's what the paranormal community has been trying to do for a long time, hence why all the instruments.
Mm-hmm.
And to see that whole field finally coming together in a constructive way that's actually being brought into law.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing to fucking see.
Like, they've already tried a couple things in the past. I mean, like, granted, it was considered, like, a laughingstock, like, Ed and Lorraine's case of The Devil Made Me Do It.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was a real thing. Like, they actually tried to introduce demonic possession in a courtroom, which kind of makes sense to me because of the whole, like, you have to put your hand on a Bible and swear to God that you're going to tell the truth. So it's like you're introducing God in the courtroom, but you're not acknowledging the devil if he exists in cases of, like, possession. Like,
exactly.
I understand. At the very least, you know, make it a thing of, like, I don't think demons are doing it, but maybe they have some type of mental disorder, even if it could be some type of fucking evil entity.
Right.
You know,
I mean, honestly, possession could eventually just be classified as a temporary mental illness.
That wouldn't shock me if we developed that one day, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Back to the article on shadow people. Dr. Ramsland first heard about the phenomenon of shadow people years ago when she was writing a travel feature about haunted places in New Hope, Pennsylvania. She had come across a story of a house in which a female resident claimed to have seen dark shadows shaped like humans. Not only that, they were aggressive. They sometimes knock things over and slam doors, and she felt threatened. This report diverged from the typical ghost settings Dr. Ramsland had heard before, so she was intrigued and often didn't see tales like it. In her report on Psychology Today, entitled Shadow People, Our Cultural Neglect of Djinn Lore Shields Us from Its Psychological Benefits, she sits with Rosemary Guiley, a leading expert in the paranormal, who had written a book about the djinn and categorizes shadow people as a version of the djinn. She has published over 50 books on a wide range of paranormal, spiritual, and mystical topics and heads Visionary Living, Inc. She has been working full-time in the paranormal field since 1983 as a researcher, investigator, journalist, and speaker. Goals.
Yeah.
Right there between these two women.
Seriously.
Just goals.
Fucking awesome.
Ms. Guiley is known more for her books on angels, demons, vampires, witches, etc., so what drew her to the subject of the djinn? She states that there are two major avenues, both involving shadow people, dark and menacing humanoids she had been researching since 2004. She already knew a bit about the djinn from earlier research in demonology and noticed that many cases of persistent negative hauntings involve shadow people, so she began probing for their true identity. She discovers that many shadow people experiencers are also ET experiencers, especially abductees.
Huh.
Through a long process, she concluded that shadow people are a shape-shifted form taken by djinn. Therefore, there is a profound connection between djinn and bad hauntings and ET abductions. Furthermore, the footprints of the djinn are evident through our mythologies about ancient aliens and gods. The picture that emerged is of a major djinn involvement in all of our entity contact experiences throughout history.
Hmm.
Although other cultures have developed a variety of djinn stories, Americans have not. Rosemary has surmised that the reason for this is that most of the bedrock non-Native American folklore in America was imported by the early immigrants who were primarily European, English, Scot, and Irish. Most of the djinn lore comes out of the Middle East and never penetrated into popular culture beyond stories of genies in bottles who are never connected to their namesake, the djinn.
Wow.
Supposedly, according to Rosemary, they are giveaway signs as to humans being able to recognize the djinn, Given they are highly adept shapeshifters, in old Jin lore they could not duplicate 100% of a human body, and usually their animal-like hairy legs and feet gave them away. She has speculated that shadow people wear hats and cowls to cover up imperfect heads.
What?
Some experiencers say that the eyes of human-shaped djinn will shift to odd colors or reptilian appearance. She believes the djinn and other shapeshifters are among us every day, and we never know unless we have certain experiences with them. According to lore, the djinn were here first and were pushed out by or for us, and some of them are still angry about it and want the place back. Their motives include curiosity, infatuation, obsession, playfulness, trickiness, hostility, and malevolence. Some people feel djinn are benevolent and helpful, but if they are, it is always for a price. People have a tendency to think that other entities are like cutout cookies, all the same. The djinn, as well as other beings, are varied, like humans, neither all good nor all bad, and with unique personalities. Yeah. The djinn have a long-standing, deeply embedded, and hidden presence among us, far greater than I anticipated in the early stages of my research. We only see the tip of the iceberg. Also, their inheritance in human affairs is extensive as well. We are influenced and manipulated, some more than others. Rosemary's book offers a wealth of lore about these unique and disturbing creatures, and to Dr. Ramsland's mind, they seem like trickster spirits. If we consider our narratives about alien creatures and psychological projections, the djinn seem to represent the trickster aspect of our universal psyche, i.e. the chaos and unpredictability that often challenge it and scare us. Reminding ourselves of this aspect through stories helps to balance our perspective, which in our culture tends to be overly rational and analytic.
Oh yeah.
Dr. Ramsland thinks that reading about the djinn is a good exercise in approaching our entity narratives from a new angle. Regardless of how or whether the djinn might interact with us, our tales about them reveal as much about us as them. They offer an intriguing mirror. I think that Rosemary has made a profound connection. These similarities between the djinn and the stories and descriptions of shadow people are eerily similar. Do I believe that all shadow people are a form of djinn? Not really, no. I think some of them may be, especially if they are tricksters. Those little bastards can really mess with you.
Yeah, they fucking can. Honestly, that was a whole new angle for it for me, too.
There are a few scientific explanations to explain shadow people, i.e. sleep paralysis or trauma-related mental health issues. The other evidence suggests that it could be a symptom of schizophrenia, sleep deprivation, or drug use. In an article titled Illuminating the Shadow People, an experiment was conducted on a patient with schizophrenia. Neurologist Olaf Blanc of the Brain Mind Institute in Lausanne, Switzerland, and his colleagues were attempting to identify the source of epileptic seizures in a 23-year-old woman. They applied a mild current through surgically implanted electrodes to various regions of her brain. Not much happened until the researchers stimulated the woman's left TPJ, located roughly above the left ear. Suddenly, she reported feeling the presence of a mystery person behind her, a motionless and speechless shadow that imitated her body posture and actions. He lay beneath her when she lay down, sat behind her when she sat down, and attempted to take a test card from her when she tried to participate in a language exercise. Blank states that such delusions are similar to those seen in patients with schizophrenia. Schizophrenics often mistake their own bodies to be someone else's, for example, and attribute their own actions to others. They also have frequent illusions of being followed or controlled by a stranger, as do those who claim to have been manipulated by aliens. Whereas Pawan Sina, a neurologist from MIT, says that Blank's idea, although valid, may have caused the hallucinations in the patient by the use of the devices in the study.
I mean, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Another unfortunate and sometimes deadly explanation for the sightings of shadow people or any specter could be linked to anything from infrasound to carbon monoxide poisoning. We as humans have a little bit of an obsession with ghosts. 10% of the population have reported experiences single or multiple times in their lives.
Yeah.
Infrasound is a sound that falls below the audible range of humans, created by earthquakes, certain animals, and severe weather that causes us to experience anxiety, sorrow, and paranoia. Another possibility is changes in the Earth's geomagnetic fields. Experiments have shown that these can stimulate the temporal lobe of the brain, creating sensations similar to that experienced during an alleged haunting.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Another cause of supposed paranormal activity have turned out to be nothing more supernatural than accidentally, wink wink, ingesting ergot, a fungal precursor of LSD.
Oh.
Or shrooms. The confusion of carbon monoxide poisoning for spiritual haunting was recorded in a 1921 issue of the American Journal of Ophthalmology by Dr. William Wilmer. Wilmer writes of the distress of his patient, Mrs. H., who tells him the troubles her family has been experiencing since moving into an older and decrepit house. Frequently using gas lights in the absence of electricity, Mrs. H. and her family began to be tormented by visions, voices, and physical illness. The family was petrified by the sounds of footsteps and moving furniture in empty rooms, and by sinister apparitions in the dark. Mrs. H. and her family had unexplained fatigue, pain, and headaches for months.
Oh, man.
But this was not an isolated incident. In 2016, investigative journalist Carrie Poppy discussed a similar paranormal experience in her TED Talk. Poppy described agonizing chest pains and a constant sense of dread. Despite seeing psychiatrists, calling ghost hunters, and trying cleansing rituals, Poppy was still affected by the supernatural. In both cases, the seemingly paranormal activity was actually caused by carbon monoxide poisoning. In Mrs. H.'s house, the family's furnace was spewing carbon monoxide into the home instead of the chimney. Similarly, when Poppy made a call to her gas company, she discovered her home had a leak. Her symptoms had been caused by near-lethal amount of carbon monoxide inhalation.
Holy shit, glad she lived through that. Mm-hmm. Fuck.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be lethal if inhaled for prolonged amounts of time. Carbon monoxide is produced during the burning of gasoline, wood, propane, and other fuels. According to the CDC, the most common symptoms of carbon monoxide poisoning are headache, dizziness, weakness, upset stomach, vomiting, chest pain, and confusion. This is starting to sound like a drug commercial.
It does, yeah.
Side effects may include blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but you gotta say it like 20 times faster.
Oh my god.
Go, go, go!
Carbon monoxide poisoning occurs when the gas is inhaled into the lungs and travels through the bloodstream. In the bloodstream, carbon monoxide binds to the protein hemoglobin. Normally, hemoglobin picks up oxygen molecules, which consist of two oxygen atoms, and transports them into the body's tissues for use. Hemoglobin carries oxygen just tightly enough that it can be released throughout the body as efficiently as possible. If hemoglobin's grip on oxygen is too loose, it won't hold on long enough for the oxygen to get where the body needs it to go. However, if hemoglobin holds onto oxygen too tightly, then it won't let go of enough oxygen to supply the body. Unlike the relationship of oxygen molecules with hemoglobin, carbon monoxide, which contains a single oxygen atom, binds to hemoglobin with an affinity 220% greater than that of oxygen molecules. This tight binding of carbon monoxide with hemoglobin prevents oxygen from reaching the body's tissues, causing cellular death. The lack of oxygen reaching the brain due to carbon monoxide poisoning can lead to a number of symptoms, including the visual and auditory hallucinations behind some lifelike paranormal experiences.
Oh, man.
Now, I will always try to debunk supernatural occurrences, not because I don't believe. I think by now that all of my lovelies know that I am a hardcore believer in the paranormal.
Right, same.
I do it because sometimes there are perfectly good scientific explanations for supernatural occurrences. Do I believe that shadow people are a real thing? Absolutely. But I will never turn down proven rational reasoning in some cases of sightings. Now, on to the wrap-up on what your lovely hosts think the shadow people actually are. I personally would back Rosemary Guiley in saying that they are possibly a form of djinn. To me, it makes the most sense, as there are just way too many coincidences between the history of the djinn and the descriptions of shadow people based on eyewitness accounts, specifically the Hat Man. I just find it way too convenient to try to explain him away when thousands of people around the world have reported seeing him. Practically identical description throughout.
Yeah, no, I definitely get that, and I feel that that is a possible valid explanation.
Mm.
Honestly, I never thought about it that way, but it makes a lot of sense. My personal opinion on it is the whole frequencies, vibrating at different frequencies and being able to move in and out of different realities sort of thing, or different dimensions. I feel like it's just creatures that walk within the astral plane, and they can only access us during certain times, or the shadow people are some sort of entity that inhabit the astral plane and ours, and can come and go as they please. And they probably feed on people's negative emotions and feelings of fear, and that's why, like, in the case of the Hat Man, he'll just be looming there, and you'll feel that dread and that fear. And he'll just feed on it until you have no energy left, and then you pass the fuck out. Or he just leaves when he's done.
But also, like, what you're saying ties into the djinn as well.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Because
and that's why I'm saying
they exist on both mm-hmm. sides.
So that puts a whole new spin on what I was thinking.
Yeah. You know? So that's what I mean. That's what I'm getting at is that there's so much history, so much connection that almost every type of supernatural creature, save shit like, I don't know, Bigfoot.
Fair.
You could pretty much, well, I don't know though, because Guiley said, like, you know, hairy legs, because,
yeah.
I mean, but still, I digress. You know, you can, like, tie almost every malevolent creature, supernatural or whatever, to some type of aspect of the djinn.
Yeah.
This is why I hold such a firm thing in, I think that's what shadow people are. It just makes the most sense. They can travel in between dimensions. Their name literally translates to being unseen.
And then there's the fact that, you know, like we've discussed before, that humans just have this innate fear of things that look like human but are not.
Yeah.
And that's probably something that's been instilled in humans since the dawn of time because of the djinn.
Yeah. So,
and, like, if they were here before us and they're still mad about it, or at least some of them are still mad about it, I'd see why they'd keep harassing humanity.
Yeah.
Like, fuck you guys. Also, you're my food source, because fuck everything else. You suck.
If I can't scare you or fuck you, I'll eat you.
Exactly.
It's like, that's pretty much what it is.
That is it.
So going off of the they were here first, if you look at the world in itself historically, everything, all the lands used to be just one mass.
Right.
If these beings were on Earth, essentially, like not just also like beyond the veil or anything like that, if they were just on Earth and we were all one fucking land mass and then it kind of just broke apart, why wouldn't they still spread to places like the U.S., even though we don't have some type of history in it?
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at stories like the Bible and other things like that. Everything originated from the Middle East.
Yeah, that is true.
Every group of tribe, civilization, or whatever kind of came from that area and just spread outward.
That's a very interesting thought.
And so if they were here before that, they could have started there, where they come, like, their story originates from the Middle East and spread outward, and then us as Americans are just like, it's scary. We don't got a name for it.
It's probably ghosts.
Yeah,
it's all ghosts or aliens. It's the only two categories we got. Because this is America.
Oh my god.
Had to.
But no, it just makes sense for that, of them being here first and then being pissed that we're not leaving, because we kind of can't.
Yeah, no.
Sorry.
Ain't going nowhere. Sorry.
So, what do you think, my lovelies? Do the shadow people exist? And if they do, what are they? We don't know what shadow figures are. In fact, they could be any or all the phenomenon we mentioned above. They could be ghosts or spirits, astral travelers, time travelers, aliens, or a bad acid trip. They could be demons or low, heavy souls trapped on this plane. One thing is certain, you'll never be quite sure again if that shadow out of the corner of your eye was just that, a shadow or a shadow person, silent and always watching. Thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode.
We definitely did. That was fun as hell.
Tune in next time for more ghastly ghouls and crazy killers.
Dun dun dun!
Don't forget to follow us on Anchor, drop by the merch store to get your official Something Wicked gear, and follow the links in the show notes to our website, Facebook group, and to check out the articles on today's topic.
Laters!